This is What's It Like with Dr. Ken Tangen.
Hi, this is Ken Tangen. This is episode 46 of What's It Like. My guest is Paul Howard. Hey, Paul, how are you doing?
I'm doing absolutely terrific. I'm happy to be here.
Well, it's good to have you. So where did you grow up?
I was born in a town called New Kensington, Pennsylvania, and I grew up mostly in a town called New Brighton, Pennsylvania, which is 30 miles north of Pittsburgh. And I spent my first 18 years of life there, and I've been on the road ever since.
Did you come from a large family?
As a matter of fact, yes. We had seven children in our family. One little sister died when she was 7 months old of whooping cough. Oh. Of course, this was back in the Depression. And to add the personal touches, it was a pretty tough childhood in that our home did not have running water or electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll leave it at that. But we survived, despite the fact that my dad had problems with employment. He eventually worked for the WPA, Works Progress Administration, as a foreman, building a reservoir, as I remember. But in any case, the family's been reduced to me and my two younger brothers. And I imagine your students would like to know how old I am. I was born in 1926. I am 84 years old.
That's a good number.
Yep, absolutely. And as you can see, I wouldn't have this shirt and tie on if I wasn't working. So I'm still working every day, thank goodness.
When you were growing up, what was your major challenge as a child?
That's a good question. I can't think of any major challenge. The situation I was in, most of the families in our part of town were in the same category, but going to school, in high school particularly, I wasn't in the right clique, so to speak. But there were lots and lots of boys mostly, but a few girls who were in the same circumstances as we were, and we got along, had fun. I guess the unusual, some of the things I didn't know that you were supposed to take homework home and study. I never did. Fortunately, I was able to pass with fairly good grades. I was sort of a smart ass in high school. Acted in a class play, not very well, but it was something to do. You can see me looking down. I'm referring to my ad libs here. Let me tell you about my senior year in high school. Would they like to hear about that?
Well, sure.
I was 17 years old, and believe it or not, the war was on. That was 1944. And the Army was drafting the 18-year-olds right out of high school. My best friend was taken in January of 44 and was not allowed to complete his high school education. He was given credit for it, but he was off to basic, and he's still alive, my age, and he's a heck of a guy. Anyway, the school in February of 1944 conducted a test for both the Army and the Navy, and this was to find out if you were smart enough to go to a college and become even smarter. In high school, since I was either smart or dumb, I took a commercial secretarial course, shorthand, typing, things like that. I took the test and I passed it. There was only two guys out of the senior class who passed it, and he went to the Navy and I picked the Army, and I went to Penn State in February of 1944, where I found out that the classes were on a college level for chemistry, algebra, trigonometry, calculus. I didn't even know what the words meant. I lasted 3 months, flunked out, and went back to, for my high school graduation. I enlisted in the Army. I couldn't go till I was 18. In October, when I was 18, I went to basic training and was sent overseas to Europe in February of 45. The war was still on. Replacement camp, assigned to General Patton's 3rd Army. That's when he made his big dash across Germany. Mm-hmm. He would go into a town, blow up a bridge or two, drop off a couple of guys, and move on. Never did catch him, and the war ended. And I got moved around a lot in Germany. And finally, in late July of 1945, they picked the 6 of us out of our place in Germany and said, "We're transferring you." Well, it took a while to transfer. And during that time, we were, as we found out, on the way to the Far East for the continuation of the war against the Japanese. Fortunately, they dropped the bomb. The war was over. And I guess the real feature of that was I was sent to Paris to help out with the typing and the shorthand. I was the company clerk in a big office building in Paris, right near the Arch of Triumph. And our commanding officer, I won't forget him, his name was John A. O'Brien from Huntsville, Alabama. And he told me, "Howard, I'm putting you in charge of the TO, the Table of Organizations," which told us how many tech sergeants, corporals, and so on we were supposed to have. He said, "You're in charge of that. I want you to promote everybody we have every 30 days. You had to be in grade 30 days before you could be promoted. Well, at the end of 6 months, believe it or not, I was a master sergeant. I was 19 years old, and on the way back on the Liberty ship, there were 3 master sergeants, and the colonel in charge called us all into a meeting, all 3 master sergeants, and he assigned 1 master sergeant to handle the meals and having reveille for the men, and he gave an important job to another guy, and he came around to me. I'm 19 years old, mind you. And he said sarcastically, "Sergeant Howard, do you think you could handle the PX?" So that was my job on the boat coming back.
What did you do after the war?
After the war, I joined the club. It was called the 5220 Club. It was $20 a week for 52 weeks. And I didn't last a full year. I did decide I better go to work, and I didn't know what to do. And I heard the announcers on KDKA in Pittsburgh, and all they would do would be say something every 10 or 15 minutes and made good money. I wrote a letter to KDKA and said, "How do I get started?" And 2 announcers from KDKA said, "Well, what a coincidence. We're starting an announcing school. Why don't you come up for the auditions?" Well, needless to say, nobody flunked the auditions. Everybody went.
You too could be an announcer.
And it was twice a week. And my first job was in a town called Flat River, Missouri, about 3,000 people. The town no longer exists. It's called something else now. I couldn't wait to get out. I'd like to explain something about how I got out. When I got the job in Flat River, I sent them my audition, which was on a big 16-inch vinyl. They kept it, and so I needed to send an audition to other places, and I didn't know how to do it because our company didn't have any of that kind of equipment. I went to the furniture store in downtown Flat River. I made a friend there, and he had a Webcore wire recorder.
Wow.
And I said, could I go in your back room for a bit? I want to test this. So I made an audition on a wire recorder, sent the wire to a station that was soon to be on the air in Blair, Ohio, across the river from Wheeling, got the job, stayed there 9 years, met my wife there. We had 55 good years together. She died in 05. We transferred to Akron, Ohio in 56, came to Charleston, West Virginia in 59, and been here ever since, except for 11 years that I spent in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Our company bought a station there and they sent me down to manage it.
Now, you've been in radio then for almost all of your professional life.
Yes, I've never done anything else, mm-hmm. Period.
So over that course of time, has technology changed a little?
That's a trick question. I can tell you this. I used to be able to handle all the equipment. And now, with all the bells and the whistles and computers, I can't do any of that anymore. But we have a lot of great people here, and I don't have to worry. One of the things that did happen to me, when I came to Charleston, the owner of the station offered 10% ownership to me. I was the program director, to the manager, and the sales manager. And the manager and I took him up on it. So we owned 10% of the company. The owner died in 1977. His son took over. His son was, and still is, a brilliant radio guy. And just to prove it, at one time, we owned stations in addition to Charleston, West Virginia. We owned stations in Fairmont, West Virginia, Mobile, Alabama, Spartanburg, South Carolina, Charlotte, North Carolina, Montgomery, Alabama, Nashville, Tennessee, Austin, Texas, Raleigh, North Carolina, and Louisville, Kentucky. And I owned 10%.
Wow. You had your own network.
Unfortunately, the owner of our company made some bad investments, borrowed $40 million from the Bank of New England. The bank went bankrupt. The government said, we'll take some of those stations, please. And as a result, there wasn't much left. But in any case, that's one of the real highlights of my radio career.
So did you work on air as well?
I was a, believe it or not, I did the morning show for about 20, 25 years. And then our sales manager said, why don't you go where the money is and get into sales, and I'll show you how to do it. He did, and I did. And
so how do you do it? How do you sell radio?
It has changed quite a bit during the years, but the basics. I might like to mention the fact that one of these sales gurus has written a book called The Accidental Salesman.
Mm-hmm.
And by that he means, how many people do you know who went to college and said, I want to be a radio salesman? Nobody. And people drift into it from programming. They drift into it from television, from selling cars or newspapers or something. And basically, it's just a matter of taking ideas to a prospect, ideas that will make money for him. And you slowly but surely build up a relationship. I think that a client has to believe in you, mm-hmm. before he'll believe in your station.
So is it a local sales business?
Yes. Incidentally, we have We have 7 radio stations in this building, and our company, which is West Virginia Radio, owns 28 stations in West Virginia, and it really is a good company and a profitable company. And that's another thing, you have to be careful in picking the right company to work for.
You said you have multiple stations that your company owns.
28.
Does each station sell ads, or do you sell them across the network?
Actually, our company also owns a company called the Metro News Network for the state of West Virginia, and they have 55 affiliates over the state, some of which are members of our company, but not mm-hmm. all, naturally.
So how do the ads work? Do you have to sell them station by station?
Well, actually, here in Charleston, where we have 7 stations, we have 9 salespeople, and all of us can sell every station.
Okay.
We have coverage of, news talk stations, rock stations, ESPN, adult contemporary, oldies. We have everything covered, I think, as far as formats are concerned. But we have good competition. We have 18 stations in our market. Our market is a 2-county market of 225,000.
So what exactly do you do?
Well, we're all obligated to produce new accounts. We have a base of accounts that we've been working with for some time, but you're going to lose at least 10% of those accounts during a year. You have to replace them, and you replace them by cold calling, knocking on doors where you've never been before. It used to be mostly retail, but now we're calling on doctors, lawyers, hospitals, people like that. And fortunately, we've been able to maintain our sales in that manner.
Mm-hmm.
What you do is the first thing you do when you call on a cold account is to ask that person whether or not somebody else from our company is calling on them. And that's happened to me. And then if they say no, then you say, well, I think we have some ideas that we can help your business. Then we try to do what we call a CNA, a client needs analysis, where we get the prospect to tell us all about his business. Who's your biggest competitor? How did you get into this business in the first place? How much is your advertising budget? And you take all of these answers back to the station and construct a commercial, have it recorded, and take it back to him or her and see if they like it. And if they do, then we put a schedule together and go on the air with the station or stations that he feels his business appeals to the most.
Do you ever come back to them and say, you're not ready for radio?
Good question again. The answer is no, but one thing that we should do, and I've done this in a few cases, when we ask what the budget is, rather than go on a weekly schedule of announcements, we believe in frequency also. So we tell the account, why don't we save up your money for a month, and instead of running 7 commercials in a week, let's take 1 week and run 28 commercials, something like that. So his advertising makes an impact, and he sounds as big as the big advertisers.
And they advertise in your radio, and then how do they know it's a success?
Well, they know if their sales expand, they know it. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of success stories. One of the things we do is that we solicit testimonials from customers. And right now we are running 20 different testimonials on our stations saying, I'm John Smith and I run the grocery store and West Virginia radio has been the only radio ever used, etc. So they're very effective. As a matter of fact, we've had some people who have not been asked to cut a testimonial. They've called the station here and wanted to know why. And it also influences other people. If a person's competitor hears him on the air, he'll say, wait a minute, that construction company is doing well with radio. Maybe I should do it.
What kind of company should advertise on the radio?
Every company, except fortune tellers, we don't accept. And some of these head shops that are here.
All right, what kind of company shouldn't advertise on the radio?
I really can't think of.
Well, why would I take an ad out? I don't charge, but I'm selling interviews with people, and I want people to know about it. Why would I do it, or would I?
Do you have a product for sale?
I have an interview with a really interesting person.
But you're not selling anything.
No.
Well, then don't buy radio.
Hey, we found somebody who shouldn't buy radio tech.
You're it.
What's the best thing about your job?
I would say, well, there are a number of things. Number one, since my wife died, the radio station, we have about 50 people working here, and this is now my family. Mm-hmm. And I have no other relatives living within 250 miles. And so it's just a pleasure to get up and work with my family. First of all, Ken, it's a pleasure to get up. but it still is fun to me to be able to get up and work with my with the people here. To make a sale is the greatest feeling in the world, and even greater is if it produces results.
What's the worst thing about your job?
I can't think of any worst thing about my job.
Isn't that nice?
I guess one of the tough things about my job is meeting my monthly quota. I'm just one of the peons, and I have a quota to meet every month. And when I don't make it, it upsets me. Mm. And it upsets management, too.
What type of person would be good at your job?
Somebody who is outgoing, likes to meet people, can converse reasonably with any type person, whether it's a professor at a university or whether it's the man selling fruit over at the Capital Market.
Well, with more of Paul Howard, right after I remind you of the good work being done by the American Red Cross. It's not surprising that you know about the American Red Cross. It's been doing good for a long time. When my parents were prisoners of war, one of the things that saved their lives was a package they got from the Red Cross. Somewhere in the world today, there are people you can help through the Red Cross. So do them and yourself a favor. Go to the American Red Cross. Go to redcross.org. Thanks. So, Paul, everyone has to give themselves motivation occasionally. How do you give yourself a kick in the pants?
Well, the easy answer is when I'm far below my quota for the month. That's an easy way to do it. But I think it's just buckling down to the job. For example, I'm worried about my August goal, even though I don't have the exact number yet. But from what I have on the books right now, I know I'm going to have to work harder. And one of the things I decided to do was to make a little one-sheeter that I'm going to mail to doctors and lawyers asking them to buy 5 back-to-school safety announcements, and I'm going to send out probably 400 or 500 letters. Hopefully that'll get me some results.
Let me turn the question around. When you have to soothe yourself, how do you calm yourself?
One of the best ways to calm myself is to have a nice tall glass of red wine, maybe 2 if I really need calming. Actually, I just take that for my heart.
Yes, of course. If you were giving a commencement address for high school or college, giving your best advice, what would you say?
My other advice is don't smoke. I did for 30 years. Buy the best quality clothes that you can afford. Don't be afraid of trying something new. And don't be bashful about asking that person for a date, man or woman.
Is there an event in your life that has challenged you to the core?
My wife's death did. Since we neither had any family here, we depended on each other, and so when she passed away, it took me a while to get straightened around over that. But as they say, time heals all wounds, and that proved to be true with me.
Mm-hmm.
You just learn to appreciate the time you had together.
Yes. Is there an idea or a principle that has helped you through the challenges that you faced?
Well, I believe in God. I believe in going to church. I believe in helping others as much as I can. After my wife passed away, I have given away quite a bit of the money that we had saved together on both sides of the family. And that's given me quite a bit of satisfaction. Be surprised how family members need a little push.
Yes. Looking back at over all the years, how has radio changed?
It's split up more. You probably remember when stations used to broadcast all manner of things on the one radio station.
Well, you could only get a couple.
Yeah, that's right. But now it's segmented so much that if you're a news talk junkie, you got a station for that. Or if you just like sports, you can listen to a 24-hour sports station. If you like music, if you like NPR-type programming, I mean, it's just become so specialized that you don't have any problems in finding your particular favorite.
Mm-hmm. If I wanted to pursue a career in radio, is that a good idea?
The answer is yes, a qualified yes, and I think that depends on the person. And if the person has the talent, for example, when I was a DJ and I was a rock and roll DJ, I had hair and everything. Now I wouldn't qualify because number one, I don't have any hair, but that's just not my bag anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as sales is concerned, I'd recommend radio sales to anybody. We also, here in Charleston, have 6 websites, which we also sell.
Mm.
So that means that you don't necessarily have to sell radio. You could sell strictly, our websites have quite a bit of sales there. So I think anybody who has any sales ability does never have to worry about getting a job.
For my last question, is there any story or event in your life you wanted to talk about but haven't had a chance to?
That's an excellent question. And to tell you the truth, I think I've told you everything. I will mention the Idea Bank, if I may.
Sure.
The Idea Bank started 50 years ago. A fellow named Dave Lyman, who is the program director of WLEE in Richmond, Virginia, put a small note in Broadcasting Magazine saying he'd like to hear from other people who might like to exchange ideas once a month. And that's all there was to it. Thank goodness, the whole idea of the Idea Bank, it's the best organization in radio, period, mainly because we can exchange any kind of information. Confidentiality is the key. You don't have any of your competitors who get any of your ideas. So we're free to express if something doesn't work, we can put in the Idea Bank, which we send to the other members and say, don't ever buy this from this guy because it's cheap merchandise, or never do business with this company, they cheat. Anyway, the Idea Bank is, I say, the best radio organization going, and we're limited to 100 members, and we have a waiting list of 25. So, you know, it's a good organization.
I want to thank Paul Howard for joining me. Thanks, Paul. I appreciate it.
Ken, it's just been a real pleasure, and I hope it will be of some service for you and your class.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
See you later.